Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. We are most appreciative of the fact that you do just that. We come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We also stream live at richarddugan.com. The radio shows page is where we archive these podcasts, as we like to call them, or I don't like to call them. That's what they are called, I guess. The podcasts are also available on SoundCloud and iTunes. And yes, Tell Me Your Story is now on Facebook. I broke down and became a member of social media, but on my terms, I'm only going, and folks, I forgive me for doing this. It's just my philosophy. You've heard it many times on this program. The only way that I friend anybody, the only way that I like anybody is if I know them, and I mean really know them. What I'm hoping is that after this interview, I will better know the author of The Magic of Circle Work, the practice women around the world are using to heal and empower themselves. My guest today is Jalaja Bonheim, and I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. I think that we're going to have a very interesting conversation today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Obviously, what we have been dealing with is not something new, and unfortunately, a lot of people think that it is. This is a new phenomenon where women are, if you will, empowering themselves. Nowadays, of course, here in the 21st century, it's for very specific reasons, taking back their power, if you will. I would have to say one of the thoughts I had as I was coming in, Jalaja, was that it's like the question that I would put forth to the listener is, if you're a man, do you really, you hear the phrase quite often, well, I know women. Most men don't know men. How in the world could they know women? And probably the reverse is also true, especially considering the fact that we are inundated with so many stereotypes of what a woman is, what a man is. And I've gotten into conversations with people about, of course, for example, Robert Bly's work on the men's movement and Iron John and so forth. You know, when does a boy become a man? Well, when's a woman become a girl become a woman and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about, and I'm curious about sort of the history as well. We're talking about women empowering themselves, and I've heard the stories. I don't know if it's mythology or not, that there have been on this planet civilizations that were matriarchal for long periods, hundreds, if not maybe 1,000 or more years. Is that a true story, as far as you know, from what you're aware of, as far as history is concerned?
I think it's absolutely true. I mean, they know that based on the archaeological evidence that they have found, when you go back to prehistoric times, and, you know, they have these statues that go back to 30,000 BC, long time, and 90% of the statues are female. And so it is, based on everything they know, it is very likely that there were these matriarchal societies. And by the way, there still are some matriarchal societies. When I lived in India, I learned about a matriarchal society in a part of India called Kerala. There is also one in Mexico. Now, one thing that's interesting to note, though, you know, when you say matriarchal, we sort of assume that means that women have more power than men. But that's actually not what it means. When you look at these societies, they might be a society, for example, where inheritance is passed down through women. But you look at these societies and you see that actually men and women are very equal in them. It's just that the roles are somewhat different than they are in our world. So matriarchal doesn't mean necessarily just that you're flipping patriarchy and, okay, now women are in charge.
Mm-hmm.
It really has to do with an honoring of the feminine, but also an honoring of our equality.
And that's really the only way that our civilization is going to survive is if we work together.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, in Western society, and probably other societies as well, in the modern times, in these times, men seem to predominate. They seem to dominate. They seem to mm-hmm. dictate the way that things are going to be. I myself, having been married twice, in my second marriage, and yes, in my first as well, I had a hard time saying no. You know, if she wanted something, I wanted to try to give it to her. So if I can avoid saying no, I might say, not now, maybe later. You know, with whatever it might be. But I also, because I didn't grow up in a household where my father was the dominant figure, my parents were a team. There's no question in my mind that's the way they came across to us. And so when, you know, and we're talking, when you were talking family, you're talking about a small little, it's a little community. And there has to be some cohesion there. You know, my parents had to get us, convince us in some fashion. I don't think it was ever through bribery. It was usually through a sense of doing the right thing, sort of obligation to the rest of the family by saying, look, you really need to keep this area clean because it affects the rest of the family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're starting to see that develop here in the United States, but it's been a long, long time coming because cooperation has been proven time and time again in studies to be more productive than competition. And I find it interesting, too. I also happen to co-host a golf radio show, and we talk about both the men's and the women's tournaments. And I often wondered, well, why can't they play together? You know, I realize that women aren't as strong, and they've got, obviously, there are different aspects, certainly. But there's got to be a way where they can, you know, compete in a fashion where they're playing the same game on the same course at the same time and having a good time.
Yeah.
And isn't that what we want to try to achieve in life? We want to thrive.
Exactly. And, you know, I think the current situation is damaging not just for women, but it's also damaging for men because men get pushed into these roles and these expectations of how they are supposed to behave that are not necessarily in alignment with who they really are. So what I see is that men are suffering just as much as women are from the current situation.
Well, that's
and
something.
That both that this cooperation that you're talking about and this teamwork really will benefit both.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what
and,
we want to talk
you know,
about too.
Yes, and I work a lot with Arab women in the Middle East, and of course there it's way more pronounced and intense than it is here. And whenever I get a chance to talk to their husbands, I always say, you know, this is not about you losing your power. This is really about both of you gaining and gaining more intimacy and depth and love and trust in your relationships, so both sides will benefit.
But a lot of the attitudes, if you will, in different parts of the world, and again, including the United States, they go back generations. They're part of the philosophical, the spiritual, the religious underpinnings of that particular community, that particular civilization. Mm-hmm. That's got to be quite a challenge for you and the work that you do through circle work, which we want to get into and talk more about. But that's got to be quite a challenge because on the one hand, you want to be respectful of the culture. You want to be respectful of their beliefs and so forth. And at the same time, make them aware of what you just said, that you're not going to be losing. You're actually going to be gaining so much more.
Yeah. Absolutely.
How do you do
and
that?
I think, well, you know, you spoke before when we started this conversation, you were saying how men may not really know women and women may not really know men. But I think it starts even at an even more deeper level that we live in a society that causes us to not really know ourselves. So that's where we start in the circles. You know, when I lead a circle gathering, I am not there to tell people what is right or wrong. I create a space where each person can really connect deeply with their own heart and soul, and they can discover, well, what is really true for me? You know? Mm-hmm. And in our world, so many people are so busy all the time and so up in their heads. I often discriminate between what I call head thinking and heart thinking. And when you are involved in head thinking, it's like you're cut off from your body. You're not connected to your heart or your feelings. So in the circle, people get a chance to sort of drop down a little bit into their heart and really check in with themselves. What am I really feeling? What is true for me? And so out of that personal authenticity, their next step emerges. So it's not me coming in and telling them what they are supposed to do, but they themselves start to realize, oh, this pattern in my relationship or in my job or wherever it is not working for me. I want to try something different. So it comes out of themselves. And we work a lot actually with the symbolism of the circle. You know, in all traditions, the circle is seen as a sacred symbol. And that aspect of the center, you know, where is the center, both spiritually and personally, where is my center? And a lot of people I work with say they feel very disconnected from their center. They're doing too much. They feel frazzled and fragmented. So through this kind of work, people come back into touch with their own center. And I think that it is only when we're really centered that we can make wise choices for ourselves.
Well, I think that's very well put. And that's one of the things, of course, we talk about on this program is back in the 60s, you would hear the phrase from a kid who was graduating from high school and didn't want to go to college because he was going to travel and try to find himself or herself, when in fact they didn't have to go anywhere. All they had to do was go within. And that's what we talk about, is going within oneself to better understand. And there are so many different ways of doing that. And you have the magic of circle work. Describe for us this concept and where it comes from.
Well, it's on the one hand, it's very ancient. When you look at traditions around the world, every single tradition you have circle gatherings everywhere, on every continent. It's like the most basic way of coming together in community. And you think even our earliest ancestors, maybe who built a fire, they would have gathered in a circle around it. So in that respect, it's very ancient. But the type of work that I teach is my own creation. It's not rooted in any specific tradition. And that is very important because one of our intentions is to create a space where all kinds of people can come together in community. So I don't care what their religion is, what their race is, what their nationality is. When we come together in a circle, we are all equal. And we create a space of tremendous safety and respect. So there is a lot of emphasis on what I call deep listening. So there is a structure where each person speaks, and when a person speaks, you do not interrupt them. You know, in our day and age, a lot of times when people talk, they're hardly listening. They're already preparing their next response. But in the circle, there's a kind of spaciousness where each person can really speak and everyone listens very deeply. So out of that, the relationships that form in the circle are very authentic and deep and often lifelong, because, you know, people may come to the circle who have no idea what the other person does for a living or how much money they make, none of that. but they get to know each other at such a deep level, and they get to really respect and love each other in a way that is very rare in our society. So there is tremendous healing that comes out of that. The life changes that come out of it are extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't just an experience that you have in a circle. It's like also, well, what happens when you go home and you start to relate to your children in a different way, or you start to relate to yourself in a new way? So there's these ripples that flow out from the experience that really transform people's lives in very beautiful ways.
Well, I know that we're all looking for those different ways to bring about a new civilization, shall we say, where everyone can thrive. And I mean everyone, that nobody gets left behind. And that has to be the main focus, that we don't get left behind and the people around us don't either. I've often heard the analogy that we're all, for example, walking up this ladder, and there's someone above us and there's someone below us. And the person above us is extending a hand down to help us up. And likewise, we extend a hand down to help the person below us. Mm-hmm. Because it's I've heard this phrase many times as well. It's all of us or none of us. You know, it's
so
not going to be part of us. You know, it's just not going to work. And I guess the some of the frustrations that I experience just in day-to-day living and listening to some of the stories that come across the wire, to coin a very old phrase, have to do with our inability to keep that in mind, that what I do affects other people. I think of, for example, the car manufacturing industry. And all of a sudden you hear that there's a recall of automobiles. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, what, 2017? No, 2002 to 2016. And I'm going, are you kidding me? That many years? You've had this problem for this many years. It's killed this many people. And only now you're fessing up to it? Where were your engineers? Where was your quality control? Where was your sense of honor and loyalty to your fellow human beings, let alone your fellow citizens?
And
this is kind of where we have to come from. I know that a lot of people are quite upset, very angry and incensed by a lot of the, and I'm going to use this term very loosely, this misbehavior on the part of men. And the thing is that this misbehavior has been going on for decades. I read an article regarding the actress Maureen O'Hara. She wrote a letter, if you will, to the newspaper that they printed, basically accusing the people in the industry, in the film industry, of the same things that men are being accused of today.
Mm-hmm.
And basically all that happened was she stopped getting roles.
Oh.
And so it's like, well, this is nothing new. And it's not just in the 20th century. This has been going on, obviously, as long as men and women have been, you know, living and working together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that there is the potential here, whether it's through circle work or other methods, of changing this, of moving beyond this phase in the human dynamic, the male-female dynamic.
Yes, I totally agree with everything that you've said. And I think it's also a question of examining the basic values that our society is run by. And we have become a society that is run by greed. And as long as that is the case, that greed and power are the main motivators, you are going to get a lot of abuse. You know? And so part of what happens in our circles is that people intuitively long for kindness. People intuitively have a very clear sense of justice and of what is right and wrong. But many times the people that I work with have been told, oh, you're just too idealistic, and this is just not how the world works. And so I think it's very important for groups of people to come together and really affirm that, no, this is not just idealism. This is how a healthy society works. That if we cannot treat each other with kindness, as you were saying before, reaching out a hand to help others, then we are not going to survive. And I think that this capacity for kindness, for compassion, for moral behavior, I don't see any difference in men and women in this respect. However, I do think that this society gives women more license to be, if you will, soft-hearted or tender or kind. And in part, I think, because women are set up to be mothers. Mm-hmm. So there is that natural tendency to say relationships matter, kindness matters. And so my hope is that as women become more empowered, they will encourage men to return also to these values, basic values of kindness, which are not male or female, they're basic human values, mm-hmm. you know, and we have lost sight of them. It's all about money and power and greed, and that is just not going to work anymore.
No, it's something that definitely has to change. I mean, I was born into, and this is the terminology that I use, I was born into a matriarchal system, of course, a mother and father. And then I had four sisters and one younger mm-hmm. brother. So my brother and I and my dad, we were outnumbered. But the dynamic was just fine. I mean, I'm still very close to my older sister. One of my older sisters, we talk quite a bit and are connected, of course, on Facebook, along with my her daughters, my nieces, and so forth. And it's really interesting how she's the older sister and very protective. I mean, she's made some comments to me about my relationships over the years that some might take umbrage at, but that's the older sister trying to protect her younger brother, and. It's one of those aspects that I know some folks have lived in. I know, too, that in some families, certain races, the mother is literally the dominant force, not dictatorial, but it's like even if there is a father, even if there's the good dynamic in a relationship there, it's like the mother, she just has she has your back. But you'll also smack your back, backside, if you say anything inappropriate. And I think too about some of the people in positions of power in this day in which we speak. If I spoke to my mother the way this individual speaks to the American people or to other people, I swear my cheeks would be so red from being slapped. I wasn't raised that way, and the only way that I've been able to come to terms with this kind of individual, rather than despising and hating them and generating that kind of energy, I say thank you, teacher, for teaching me that that's not the way I want to behave. Mm-hmm. You're giving me the lesson of being the opposite of what you're being and doing. Yeah. And then there's the other aspect too of. Again, the misbehavior of men in our day and time, and many of them have had to step down from their positions, whether it's in the media or politics or wherever, with the exception of one individual who's been accused by numerous women and yet still holds office. I cannot understand the double standard. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's frustrating men as well as women, that you talk about inequities in economics and in education and in opportunity. Well, what about the inequities? And of course, I also have this other problem too, John Lajow, is that the accusations that have been made are just that. They're accusations. But I thought in this country you were innocent until proven guilty. And yet, some people have been accused. They've denied the accusations, but have had to step down, have had to walk away. Mm-hmm. And I just, and maybe this is one of the reasons why some men are, they're afraid. They're walking around shaking in their boots. Because, gee, back when I was in my teens or 20s, I did this or that or the other. Could that come back to haunt me now I'm in my 40s, 50s, 60s, what have you, to destroy my life? You know, I mean, we've all done things that we're not proud of. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we hopefully have worked on ourselves. Talk to us a little bit about this and then how we move beyond it. How do we get to the next level to where we start working together, empowering one another?
Yeah, it's such a big question that you're posing there. One of the paradigms that I find very interesting that is coming up more and more are these paradigms that scientists are finding throughout nature where things are not centralized, but there is sort of this pervading collective intelligence that you see it in flocks of birds, in swarms of fishes, you see it in bees and ants, where each individual is playing their little role, but nobody is in charge, and yet somehow the whole thing works. So there is clearly a higher guiding intelligence. So I feel that in these times that we are in, I meet so many people who are addressing the need for change in a million different ways. And when you look at each tiny way, you know, I look at my little circles that I've done, and I look at someone else, and you could say, well, that's so small. It's not going to really make much of a difference. But then when you look at the bigger picture, you realize that there does seem to be a collective intelligence here that is at work. And I hear that collective intelligence manifesting in these days in this desire for a new relationship between men and women, in this outrage over the abuse of power. So even though you can't point to one thing or one person or one solution, you can say that the collective intelligence of our species is at work. And none of us can say exactly where it is leading, just as a single ant doesn't know that they are building this huge city. And yet, it is evolving. And I have a lot of faith in that, you know, that intelligence of evolution that is working through us. And so a lot of times I work, for example, with activists who say, we're getting so discouraged. We've been working on this for years and years, and things are still not resolved. And I say to them, you know, that we can't expect to do our work and see immediate results. You think of someone like Martin Luther King, who never saw a black president. So many of the things that we are doing may not bear fruit mm-hmm. for a long time.
Yeah.
And yet, if each one of us really gives the unique gift that we came here to give, I believe that change will happen. So I would encourage everyone to say, what can I do? Even if it's just a tiny, tiny speck of dust, if we all do our part, change begins to happen.
Well, as has been said many times, if you be the change you want to see, and the change has got to begin with each of us as individuals as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when we look outside of ourselves at what's going on, it is a reflection of what's going on within ourselves, and then it's time to, stay there inside and say, okay, well, if that's what's going on the outside and I want to change that, what do I need to change on the inside? And mm-hmm. the circle work that you are doing, the magic of circle work, which is the title of the book, the practices that women are around the world are using to heal and empower themselves. It's what we're talking about. Jalaja Bonheim is my guest. We're talking with her about Circle Work. We're going to give you a website here in just a moment. And we are going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay with us.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with Jalaja Bonheim of the work, Circle Work. The magic of Circle Work is what we're talking about. And there's also a website, magicofcirclework.com. We encourage you to go there. We'll be linked to that website as well, and we hope that you will avail yourself of this information, male or female. All of us need to start doing this this kind of work. There are still times when I have gotten to a point of such a level of stress that I just want to shake something. You know, I just want and it just in the frustrations. There are times when, for example, I will have a phone conversation, and the conversation is just horrendous, and I want to throw the phone against the wall. And strangely enough, one of the first thoughts that goes through my mind is, it's not the phone's fault. Don't hurt it. I'm still using the same one I've had for, believe it or not, folks, 2 years. I don't like upgrading. I really don't. However, we as human beings, and I have to wonder, because of the way you've described all of this, it doesn't sound to me like what we're trying to do is an upgrade. We're actually, and I don't want to say it's a downgrade, but it's like digging deeper inside to find those things that are really who and what we are. Mm-hmm. You talked about, you know, that kindness is nothing new and exclusive to men versus women or women versus men. It's part of who we really are deep down inside, and always have been, right?
I agree. I think we are trying to align ourselves with nature. And we've fallen out of alignment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is nothing new. The shape that it's taking, obviously, in the 21st century is going to look different. But this need to come into alignment with nature, and nature is giving us very clear signals that we are out of alignment, and we need to pay attention, we need to listen. But the thing is that to make a difference, we need to connect. And there are certain things we can do on the internet, online, etc. But there are other things which I believe we can only do when we connect person to person. And I work a lot with conflict resolution, for example, when I bring together Jews and Palestinians. There is something that happens when you sit face to face and you really hear the other side's story and you listen and you're together. And in my retreats, we are sharing meals together. You know, we are really living together. That makes all the difference. And I don't really think there is any substitute for that. And I see the same kind of fragmentation in our communities here, in whether it's racial or political. I see the circle as a structure where people who are very different can come together and begin to appreciate and respect each other. And it does require a very clear, safe structure for that to happen. So the circle is such a natural form where people can, in a sense, remember that we are all the same and that what divides us is actually far less than what unites us. And to really understand that in a visceral way, I believe we need to come together.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found interesting in one of my interviews some time ago was with an author who travels to the Middle East regularly and holds interfaith gatherings with the youth. And one of the messages that he shared, and I was blown away by what he said. He said that when he's talking to the youth, what he's hearing from them is sort of the conversation they're having with their parents. And they're basically saying, Mom, Dad, that fight that you constantly talking about against those people on the other side of that wall, that's yours, not ours. We don't want any part of it. And we just experienced here in the United States where the youth of this country in schools said, we don't want any more gun violence. And so they stepped out of class at 10:17 a.m. local time across the country and stayed out for 17 minutes in honor of the 17 people who died in the most recent shooting. And it seems as though it's kind of strange in one sense, although you go back to the, let's say, the 60s and the major demonstrations at that time, that was young people then. But we're talking high school here. I mean, you know, not college age.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that maybe there is more truth to that phrase, and a little child shall lead them, or children in this case. It seems to me like the folks in our generation, you know, we better listen, and we better start doing something, because they're not going to put up with much more of our foolishness in that regard as the so-called adults who know what we're doing. Because you know what? Sometimes I think we haven't got a clue.
It's so true. And, you know, I think that there is much more these days an awareness of what I call global citizenship. You know, that, okay, maybe I'm American, or maybe I'm Christian, or maybe I'm this, or maybe I'm that. But I'm also a citizen of this planet Earth. And that is a relatively new awareness. You know, I think of that moment when Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon, how recent that really is. That was in the 60s, but that was the very first time that humanity got to see what our planet looks like from outer space.
Mm.
And every single astronaut who saw that was transformed by it, because the clarity with which they understood that this is one planet, that we are part of a single community. And that is something that the younger generation has grown up with. And of course, the internet is reinforcing that something can happen, you know, on the other side of the world, and you know about it immediately. So I think there is a growing awareness that we are all in the same boat, and that we need to work together as a planetary community. And all the big problems that we're facing, like climate change or nuclear weapons, they're all problems that cannot be solved by one nation on its own. They can only be solved in cooperation. So I do think that there is a new awareness growing in the younger generation that the older generations didn't grow up with in the same way.
Yeah. Well, in spite of my frustrations, as I've shared at the beginning of this program regarding social media, maybe that whole process will actually bear some really good fruit as far as our ability to move forward as a society, to actually grow and to change and to thrive. I mean, that is just one of the biggest, for me, biggest points of doing what we're doing with this radio program is, I mean, I'm only 58. I'm tired of surviving. I'm tired of living paycheck to paycheck. I'm tired of all of those things. And there's more than enough on this planet for everyone. Of everything. It's and it's not a question of, okay, then we get to consume everything. That's not what I'm saying. Because not everybody wants the same things. What I'm saying is, of course, that we don't need to be hoarding. You talk about nature. I've talked about the fact that nature is the greatest number one teacher there is. Show me where in nature other species, and again, this is other than man, stocks up for more than a season. There isn't one.
No.
I mean, the squirrels, because this is always thrown at me. Well, the squirrels are always gathering nuts and stuffing them in trees and stuff. I said, yeah, that's for one season. They're not doing it for 10 years. They don't have silos filled. You know, and then when spring rolls around, they start all over again. And that's life. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But what do? Whether it's things or money. I mean, we talk about the disparity in economics. I want to ask you, getting back on track here to the magic of circle work. How did you get involved in this and why? Why does this even matter? You found the answer. Just go off and do your thing and let the rest of us, you know, figure it out for ourselves.
Yeah,
you know?
No. It doesn't work that way. I think, you know, I recently saw this fascinating article by the former Surgeon General of the United States. His name is Vivek Murthy. And he writes about the fact that in our world, loneliness is the number one health epidemic, and that the measurable effects of loneliness are more damaging than even smoking or obesity.
Wow.
So I feel like this issue of people giving people a way to connect, and not to connect just at a very superficial level, the way we connect at the supermarket, but to really connect, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I so appreciate that is something you are doing in your shows here. You are allowing people to connect at a deeper level than is usually possible in this society. So there is an epidemic of loneliness. And many of the women who come to my circles will tell you, I have a great family, I have friends, and yet I feel lonely because there is a kind of connection that I am craving, and I'm not finding it. And so I really started leading these circles because I, too, was craving that kind of connection. And I went to Buddhist centers, I went to this, I went to that. I tried many different things, and I respect them all. But I was not finding the way of being in community that I was longing for, which was a much slower way, a way that allowed people to listen more deeply to themselves and others, a way that also honored the body, because in my circles there's also movement, there is music, there's immersion in nature. So really I created these circles because I myself was craving a way of being together that I couldn't find. And then I soon discovered that there were many, many other people who shared my longing. And so for me, it really is one of the easiest ways that we have to address this epidemic of loneliness. Huge numbers of people in our society today live alone. There are more and more people who have no family or their family lives far away, and yet they too need community. And where are they going to find it? You know, so the circle is, as I mentioned before, it's both a very ancient form, but it is also a form that can address our specific needs today in the 21st century.
Where do you see us in 50, 100, 1,000? Are we still going to be here, or are you optimistic about humanity's survival into maybe the 22nd, 23rd century kind of thing?
You know, I like to say, I don't know, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think we're living in a time none of us knows what's going to happen. I hope we'll still be there in the 23rd century. One thing I know, though, is life will continue. You know, life will find, just like the dinosaurs went extinct and other forms evolved. So I hope we will be here. I hope we will find our way through this crisis. But I think it's really good to stay in that place of, I don't know, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that our world evolves in a positive direction, and that's all that matters. And if I do that, then I will die content, regardless of how things turn out.
Mm. Well, I try to keep an optimistic perspective on this as well, and some days it's easier than others. That's why I try not to listen too much to the news, in spite of the irony that I work for news and talk information stations. But I try to disconnect as much as I can, because I know it doesn't help. And we usually try not to talk about current events on this program, just simply for that very reason, that it really doesn't serve any purpose. I've basically said that I already know that I already know of man's inhumanity to man. It's been going on as long as we've been here, and it's going to continue at least probably for a while longer. I don't need to be bombarded by that information on the radio and the TV and the newspapers and what have you. And it's really frustrating for some folks when they come to me and they say, so did you hear about this that happened? And did you hear what happened in Florida? Did you hear what happened in Tennessee? Did you hear what happened in Bangladesh? I said, no, what happened? How is it that you don't know? Because I know that these things are happening. The names change, the locations change, the details might change, but the general malaise is the same. And until we start looking within, nothing's going to change. Tell me about how we can make that change using our intuition, because we talk about that a lot on this program, listening to that still small voice.
Yeah, and you know, I think the change is already happening, and it's the nature of the news that they only give you the bad news, the sensational news. So if a group of people gathers and creates a wonderful experience and life-changing transformation comes out of that, that's not going to make the news. So from what I see, I think there are two realities. There is the reality that we see on the news, but there is a whole other reality where millions of people are doing amazing things, and it just doesn't make the news. So I just wanted to add that to what you had said. But I agree, intuition is so crucial. And I always describe circle work as a spiritual practice, but not a religious practice. So there is no belief system, there is no none of that. There's nothing religious. But there is a space that feels profoundly sacred, and where the chatter of the mind slows down. Because if you want to listen to your intuition, you know, if you're like in a super noisy place, that is really difficult. And for a lot of people, their mind is that super noisy place. So we need to go to a place where we can slow down, where we can turn inward. Most people do need a little support for that. And where we can really say, well, what is my intuition, or if you wish, my soul, my heart, what is it saying to me? And a lot of times, the women I work with are astounded at how ready their soul is to speak to them. A lot of times the message that comes is, well, I thought you would never ask. You know, there's a sense of there is this wisdom in us that is waiting to come out. And all we need to do is turn off that noisy mind radio and listen to it. It's right there. It wants to speak to us.
Yeah. And there are times when we can be about one of our busiest days and it's speaking to us. So we get this prompting. And I mean, I've had it happen, and I've used this. I've shared this example where I was riding my bicycle. I lived in Phoenix, and I had to drive through farm fields to get to the transmitter site where we broadcast from. And this prompting, it said, okay, up at this next intersection, you need to turn right. I don't know why. It just said, turn right. I kept going straight for half a mile. And it got stronger and stronger and stronger to the point where I couldn't ignore. I had to turn around and go back. I made the turn, and I went up a block And then I turned and I went down a block and then I turned again and I got to my destination. I got to work. I don't know what it was that I was avoiding or what I was going to come across. I don't know the reasons why. All I know is that prompting was there and it would not go away.
Mm-hmm.
And other times it's much subtler and so forth. It's not screaming in my head, so to speak. But I know, too, that I've been challenged by people who say, well, yeah, you know, you're listening to that still small voice. How can you be sure where that small voice is coming from? I know that's a concern for a lot of folks today because we're all getting all different kinds of messages. How do we best evaluate, if you will, on a soul level, the source of that prompting, that voice, if you will, that guidance and instruction? How do we do that?
Yeah, I understand. The first thing I would say is that if it is the authentic voice of the soul, it is always a voice of love. So if you hear anything that is other than love, then it is not your deepest voice. It is not a trustworthy voice. So it is always the voice of love. And then what I find is that as I work more and more with my intuition, it's like a painter who trains themselves to recognize 1,000 shades of green. As you work with your intuition, you learn to recognize the energetic quality of authentic intuition. It has a very unique feel. You just know that it is true. Mm. And in my own life, whenever I have not followed that intuition, I've regretted it. And I have never regretted following it. So to some extent, you know, everyone needs to have their own experiences with it and to test it and to find what is true for them. But I can say for myself that when I follow my intuition, it leads me very wisely and well. But also I have learned to recognize that unique quality of loving, pure energy that comes through it.
Hmm. If, let's just say for the sake of argument, that this was your last day, would you feel satisfied that you had accomplished everything that you came here to do, to change the world at least as much as you were able to? Or would you feel that there were some things that were left undone?
Well, if I speak from my you know, you can answer that from two different ways. If I just speak for my human self, of course, there are many things I would still like to do. But from the place of my soul, I would say absolutely, I have had the most amazing life. I am filled with gratitude. And I am one of those people who actually got to do work that I loved. Mm-hmm. You know, how many people get that in this world? And so and I remember once being in a car accident where I was convinced that I was about to die and feeling this sense of absolute peace that it was perfectly okay. Mm. So, yes, I think I would be, you know, I still would like to do some more living, but
and we want you to. We need
grateful.
You. We need you desperately to continue.
Yeah,
we need all the help that we can get, and certainly, I'm curious about. I mean, we're talking into intuition, which is very esoteric, very untangible. Do you seek guidance, if you will, in the work that you do, from not just your intuition, but even from, shall we say, I can't think of any other term to use, the spirit world? Do you have any guides or non-tangible support that you get along the way? Or is that something that is part of your philosophy?
It is. It's not something I necessarily speak about.
Mm-hmm.
when I do a circle. But it's very present for me when I am leading a circle. I feel like I'm not leading the circle alone. I really feel there is invisible support. And, you know, I sometimes speak of what I call the spirit of the circle. I feel like the circle itself has an intelligence. I think of the circle not just as this geometric form, but I think of it as this ancient ally who has been helping our species for thousands and thousands of years. So absolutely, when I'm leading a circle, I feel that spirit realm present. And as I said before, I'm not a religious person, so I don't necessarily give it a name, but I feel it very strongly, and many times other people in the circle feel it as well.
Well, I know that a lot of people put a great deal of credence, if you will, into these other, you know, other realms, if you will.
Yeah.
And they take great comfort. A lot of times they'll even describe it as, you know, maybe a relative, you know, who's still with them,
mm-hmm.
who's still
mm-hmm.
sharing space and time in this regard. And that can make a big, big difference to a lot of folks, you know, when it comes down to, you know, getting through their day-to-day lives. It just works. Nobody knows why, per se, but it just does.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
No, I think there's an absolute reality to it, and how we each think of it will depend on our own background and our tradition. But, I mean, there's no tradition around the world that doesn't acknowledge the spiritual realm.
Mm.
I think it's absolutely essential to our makeup as human beings that we have that capacity to open to that. And for some people, it happens. I've had people who had near-death experiences, and in those times, in those moments, they had encounters with what you might call angels or divine beings. I think it's essential to who we are.
Yeah.
And I think it's sad that, you know, a lot of people who come to my circles, they have this spiritual hunger, but they're not comfortable anymore with traditional religion. And so there's a lot of people who are sort of living in this spiritual vacuum because they want this connection with the spirit realms and they're not sure how to get it. And many of the women who come to my circle say, the circle is my spiritual home. You know, here I find that presence of the sacred without needing to adopt any kind of ideology or belief system.
So this whole process has nothing to do with men or women being superior over the other, to gaining an advantage, to increasing their power structure, what have you. This is really all about fostering and continuing to nurture community, cooperation, teamwork, a collectiveness, if you will. And that's what the magic of circle work really is all about.
Yes.
Let me ask you also to describe for us, if you can, in, you know, maybe a few steps, as to the process you have. What would be the largest group of women that you might have come in? Because I would think that the larger the group, the less intimate it might become.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, I've worked with some pretty large groups, 60, 70 people, and it is pretty surprising how you can create a sense of intimacy. But for example, when I lead the circle work training, where I train other women to lead circles, those are limited to 15, and 15 women will spend a week together. So that is really an ideal number that allows us to go really, really deep together. Yeah.
So what are the steps? You get these women together, the 15, 20 women, let's just say, whether mm-hmm. it's a train, and let's say it's not a training. Let's say this is a group of women that you want to facilitate. And you gather whatever the location might be in their particular community. And what's the time frame as far as how many hours or days? Because I've been through 5-day intensives back in the 80s and 90s that were pretty incredible. I have great memories of that. And so I'm wondering what that structure looks like for circle work.
It can be anything from an hour to a month, really.
Oh, really? Okay.
You can do a lot of ongoing circles, might meet, you know, once a week or every couple of weeks for just an hour or an hour and a half. That works, too. Obviously, it'll be a very different experience, but it can be a beautiful experience. So you would always start with clarifying the ground rules. You know, there are just certain things that make the circle work. For example, confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
So that if someone shares something confidential in the circle, it's not shared outside. There's certain things you do to make sure that the circle is a safe and sacred place. Another one that is startling for some people is to not give advice. You know, if someone shares something difficult, there's a tendency to want to give them advice on what to do, and that is not helpful in the circle. So we really listen to each other, and unless someone asks for advice, there is no advice giving.
Mm.
So I would, the biggest challenge at the beginning of the circle is that people come with all this busyness and all these worries and everything that's on their mind. And I sometimes compare it with when you step over the threshold into a cathedral, you immediately sense, oh, this is different. This is a different kind of space than out on the street. And the same thing is true in the circle. And so my job as the circle facilitator is to help people shed that mental worry, busyness, and become really present to the sacred energy in the circle.
Mm.
So that is how we start. There's a wide range of exercises that I've developed and that I teach. Some of them involve touch, some of them involve movement, some involve talking, sharing, but they're all really designed to help deepen the sense of safety, of connection between people, of slowing down and of turning inward.
Well, I know that having gone through the various programs I've been through since the early 80s, that if you stay open, you know, and put down the shield, if you will, put down the walls, man, you can just get so much out of it.
Mm.
And it can be so profound and eye-opening. One of the most profound things for me when I was going through some of the programs I went through, the first maybe half hour to an hour of the one of these 5-day intensives, I'd be looking around the room, and I was in my 20s when I went through my first one, early 20s, and it was very interesting because I began to judge a book by its cover. I would go around the room saying, well, I'd like to get to know that person, and No, stay away from this person. And I would make those kinds of judgments, right, in the first hour or so. And the very interesting dynamic that happened is by the end of the 5 days, I was closer to the list of people I said I did not want to get close to and farther away from the very people I wanted to get close to for, unfortunately, rather selfish reasons. And I found, so when I started in the 90s going through some of these programs, I stopped doing that. I'm thinking, you know, this is not serving me. This is not working real well. And I still remember one woman in one of the programs that I went through and actually went through several levels of this one organization with her and other people, certainly. This was one woman who I never, even to this day, she refused, for whatever her reasons were, to hug me.
Mm.
She would say hello, we would talk, but she would never, ever. And someone said to me, says, well, she may have a lot of baggage. You may remind her of her father, an uncle, somebody who mistreated her. And she's just not willing to cross that line, and she's not willing to repair that bridge with that person, and you are that representation. So don't take it personally, which, you know, I don't. But I found that very interesting that, man, you could hug anybody you wanted in the group. But there was no way she was ever, and I even reached out once to try, and she pushed away. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that again.
Yeah.
These are just fascinating. And that kind of goes to what an interesting aspect here as we wrap up the program in terms of the various relationships that we develop over the course of our lives, there are some folks you're going to connect with and others you're not. But that doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong with you. The great analogy I heard was chocolate cake. There's chocolate cake sitting on the counter in the kitchen, and you come in and you look at that chocolate cake going, oh, it has great smell of chocolate, and boy, it looks really great, but I don't want any chocolate cake. Mm-hmm. Now, is there anything wrong with the cake? No, there's nothing wrong with that cake. You just don't want it right now. The cake doesn't take it personally. So why should you when someone says, I don't want to associate with you? Because that's their baggage. That's their stuff. And again, this is in any level of relationship, whether it's a very intimate relationship or business or an acquaintance or what have you. I mean, that's just the way that that I started looking at things, and I was able to not take those kinds of I was able not to place the label of rejection on that event and thus not take it personally.
It's such a great lesson.
And we talk about that on this program in terms of the fact that we have these choices, and we have the choice. We can choose to associate or not associate with people for whatever reason we choose. But that's our choice. It's nothing personal to them. It's, again, all of those masks that we've, I guess, taken on over the years that filter. And when you're going through circle work, it sounds to me like you're asking women in particular, I don't know, do men participate at all in these circle work?
Yes, I do sometimes lead circles for men also. Mm-hmm.
But you ask them to set aside all of that stuff.
Yes, yes. And that dissolution of judgment that you were describing is something that happens. We can't help but have these knee-jerk judgments about people. But to sit and watch them dissolve is such a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's again, all of this is so extraordinary to me. I've always been fascinated by these dynamics as I've gone through my life. It has not always been easy. Didn't do so well in school from that standpoint, but still, some great lessons learned. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. This has been an extraordinary hour, and the work that you're doing, in my opinion, is quite extraordinary. And I want to let our listeners know that they can get more information by going to magicofcirclework.com. They can also go to your website. You have another website, Jalaja Bonheim. That's JalajaBonheim.com to find out more about the magic of circle work, the practice women from around the world are using to heal and empower themselves. And before we let you go, the first thing I'd like to put out is that if you should ever find yourself out here on the Central Coast, Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Thank you so much. It's been a tremendous pleasure, and thank you for all the work that you are doing.
And also, final three questions for you before we let you go. Who is Jalaja Bonheim?
Well, you know, Jalaja is a name I was given in India, and it means lotus. And the lotus is a flower that is rooted in the mud and grows toward the light. So that is really what I feel my life's purpose is, to grow towards the light.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
would be to inspire people to relate in kinder, more loving ways, and for those kind relationships to really ripple out and start to heal our world that is so in need of that.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Wow, these are big questions.
We like to save them for the last.
Yes, yes. My life's purpose, well, certainly to be in service of spirit and to be in service of this force that, you know, love is such an overused word, and yet it is something so powerful and so real. So to be in service of that, if I can make the world a slightly more loving place, then I will have done my job.
Well, the work that you're doing now through the Magic of Circle work is quite extraordinary, and we certainly look forward to having an opportunity to talk with you further. You also have a companion work that goes for people who are wanting to go through training. It's a training manual for circle work?
Yeah, the training manual is really a guidebook for facilitators. It's got lots of exercises and how-to and troubleshooting. I originally wrote it for the graduates of the circle work training, but really anyone who works with groups and wants to take their work to a deeper level can benefit from that.
And both these books are available not only on your website, but also probably through Amazon and other book outlets as well.
Yes.
Well, wonderful. Yes. And again, we do look forward to having you back again. And again, my thanks for giving us so much time here on the program.
Thank you so much.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.